You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 237. To the Punk News Podcast. This is features editor and now big time record executive Johnny G, John Gentile, coming back at you. And today we got a cool episode. Today it's two Adams, a John, and a podcast, because I'm here with two of the heavy hitters of Punk News, two of the guys that really keep the train on the tracks, the wheels greased, and the whole thing, just all the coal just shoved right into the burner. First of all, I'm here with the guy that combs through every single letter. And when I say letter, I mean like letter posted on the Punk News Podcast. Every period, every comma, every semicolon, he goes through it. He's the semicolon doctor. I'm here with copy editor, reviews editor, news editor, Adam Eisenberg. Adam Eisenberg, an official man of the Sun-Times down in Miami, correct?
Sun-Sentinel.
Sun-Sentinel. So, Adam Eisenberg. You know, I know you must be, feel pretty special working out at the Sun Sentinel, but this is Punk News. This is a little bit more big league than the Sun Sentinel, you know.
I agree. We're a national, international publication.
So what's happening down in Miami, Adam? How's it going down there? Is it sunny and nice, and what's happening, man?
Last week it was the coldest it's been in 4 years. I woke up and it was like 52 degrees, and by noon it was like 68. People were wearing boots and scarves and shit. That's something people don't understand about here. It doesn't get very cold, but once it drops below 70, people bust out the winter gear because it's fashionable.
I have this theory that the sun like makes people goofy, like in certain areas. Do you agree with that? Do you think the sun like bakes people's brains out, or is that pseudoscience that I'm incorrect about?
I think it may be pseudoscience, but I think there's something to it. I mean, it's the Wild West down here. People are crazy, and I think the sun does have something to do with it.
Well, the opposite. The other Adam, who doesn't live in the land of heat, but the land of cold, the land of icebergs, we are here with managing editor, the top dog, the top ramen, Adam White. Adam White, what's happening, man? I think you just bought a house. Oh, we talked about this last week, but have you moved in yet, or are you still doing closing?
No, all the shit is signed, and we're good, and we move in a month or so. So now we got to pack up all of our current garbage and get rid of it, and it's work. If anyone from the podcast wants to come to my house and pack things in boxes.
I am actually sitting amongst all of my stuff from just moving recently, and there is a lot of stuff.
But let's not talk about exciting things like moving. Let's get back to talking about weather here, because I'll speak your language instead of Canadian. But right now in Niagara Falls, it is 10. And with the wind chill, it feels like -1.
That's cold, so, baby. That is cold.
That's cold. Now, it sounds way cooler in Celsius, because in Celsius it's -14 and it feels like -19. Yesterday morning, I've got in the car, and the radio guy was like, oh, with the wind chill, it's going to feel like -30. And I let out this audible, holy shit, as I was driving, because -30 is, I don't know, is a psychological barrier that I cross at 29, I guess. -30 is fucking cold.
That's cold, baby. But speaking of things that are cold, you know, it's the wintry months here. And in the wintry months, news is always a little bit slow, but that's cool. So on today's podcast, we're just going to chill out. We're going to read some mail. We're going to talk about some cool stories. We're going to shoot a little bit of shit. This is going to be a loosey-goosey podcast. Because, you know, most of our podcasts are just so jam-packed, we don't have time to get through everything. But this week, we're just going to chill. And first of all, as we're chilling, we talked about this last week. The Punk News My Org mixtape is officially released for $6. You can't beat that. 42 bands, exclusives, stuff from Jesse Michaels, stuff from Mischief Brew, stuff from the Shags, some of the hottest, coolest new bands, some of the legends. We got the Dwarves, we got Jello Biafra on it. The tape's out. people are, I mean, it's not out, but the tape is purchased. People that have heard it are really digging it. And I got to say, boys, I got to pat myself on the back. I think this tape came together pretty well. I think it's a pretty cool little thing.
Yeah, I would offer you a virtual pat on the back right now. I will listen to this in my wife's car where the only cassette player is. I may even purchase or possibly steal a cassette player to listen to this in my house.
Nice.
This may be the thing that introduces a cassette player into my life. Although I gotta say, there's all these like these shitty garage bands that I listen to. They're all about cassettes these days, and it's forcing me down this road that I've been trying to avoid. But if I want to hear stuff,
it is a gimmick. But you know what? Sometimes I'm happy to ride the gimmicky waves. Like when they were selling those bootleg Bart Simpson T-shirts. Those were cool, man. I bought one. You know what I mean? So, when in Rome, do as Los Romanos do. That's what they say.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I love how goofy this thing turned out. And I mean, we talked about this in the past show. It's cool. People should go check it out. We don't actually have like a permanent buying link that we can tell people on this show to just go to. Go to Punk News. It'll probably be somewhere on there.
If you just go to Google and you put Punk News mixtape, it comes right up, and that'll take you to the buying link.
And Google is...
Google is a search engine, you see.
So anyways, no, this is super fun. It came out. I think one of the things I want to talk about here, John, was... Is this going to be the only one of these we do, or is this the start of some sort of some trend of us making weird shit?
It's up to the listeners, and here's why, baby. Listeners, there are a limited number of these, and at the time you hear this, they might be sold out. So I really think you should buy one if you want one, because they are selling quick. But Adam, I have a dream, and in my dream, I would love to put out one of these every 6 months or every 12 months and, like, make it a thing, you know, like some magazines did in the 80s. Like, I would love to make this a thing. Like, every 6 months, we put out a new mix of legends and classics, or maybe we do themed ones. Or maybe we do, like, our version of Bullshit Detector, which is, like, just 30 bands that no one's ever heard of, you know? Or maybe we do, like, all, like, rare old 70s punk tracks. Or maybe we just keep doing it like this one, you know, like, cool, like... unexpected bands, like we got KRS-One on this, we got Andrew WK, we got Lee Scratch Perry, which is insane, but we also got some really hot new bands. We got Downtown Boys, Bad Canoes, Pushing It to the Limit, a lot of awesome new bands. So the point is this, is if I'm able to break even on this, then I'm happy to keep doing it and you know, allow input from, I mean, actually, well, people kind of think this is a John Gentile project, and certainly I helmed it, but this is not exclusively me. Adam White did a lot of work on this. Adam E. did a lot of work on this. All the editors and all the staff suggested bands on it. So the point is this, is if I'm able to break even on it, and if the people demand it, I would love to keep doing this once per year or once every 6 months. And that's what's nice. About a cassette, I can quite easily do one every 6 months, but the people have to demand it. If I can't break even, I'm not going to take a hit on it every 6 months, you know? But if I break even, I will keep doing it. And I'll point out, neither Punk News nor myself is taking a dime from this. If there's any profits, which I don't think there will be, but if there is, then we're going to make more cassettes for bands and give them to bands for free to sell or do whatever they want with them.
Yeah, I some people might be surprised to know that we're not going to make a massive profit on this.
Oh, cassette tapes. Well,
that's what I love. Is that some people don't seem to get that part of the joke, I guess.
That it's a cassette tape.
Some people are like seriously in there, like why isn't it digital? Now I can't hear it. How am I going to listen to it? And it's like if you were just to put together a bunch of songs digitally, it's a fucking blog post. Like that's everyone does that. It's boring. It's not fun. There's no whimsy to it. Of course, it's cassette tape. Like this thing is. Unnecessary, like, and it has to be unnecessary. This is not, you know, how do we get this information out to the biggest audience possible? Like, where are the kids these days? Let's chase them. Like, no, this is a goofy, weird little product that we've made that is like esoteric on purpose, and that's kind of how it's supposed to be.
And I would just like to point out, people are like, I don't have a cassette tape. How can I? A tape player is $10. $10 on Amazon. This cassette tape is $6. That's $16. That's still cheaper than your average record. And you have a cassette player that works on any cassette that you want. So anyway, the point is, people have been buying this quick. People have been really into it, which is really exciting. The bands on this are super duper into this. So really, I think you should check this out, people. $6, you can't go wrong. And that's that. And snatch it up, because they are selling quick, and I'm not going to do a second press. So anyway, we got a little bit of mail. Adam, this is Adam W. This goes to you. This is from Sam. Sam said, "Hi, guys. I'm a listener since the beginning way back, and I am stoked to see the podcast not only still going strong, but with new and invigorated energy, with new crew for the most part. I'm moving from home in Australia to Toronto now, and am pumped to be closer to the punk scene. Can Adam please give me any bars and venues and knowledge to get started? I would really appreciate it." His favorite Canadian punk bands are Effed Up, Crusades, The Creeps, Flatliners, and the Steve Ademic Band. Any help would be awesome. Thanks, guys. Sam.
Ooh. All right, now I got to pretend that I know anything about Toronto other than have utter contempt for it.
when it starts, I'm moving to Toronto. What should I do? I hate Toronto.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Toronto's great, and it's a big city, and it's full of stuff. It's kind of like a Canadian Chicago, right? But if you don't live in Toronto and you're Canadian, you hate Toronto almost as a sport. So, unfortunately, Guy, you have to live with my eternal contempt. There's lots of stuff in Toronto. I don't know really the bar scene all that much because, I mean, I don't hang out there because it's a 2-hour drive away. There's some great record stores in Toronto that you should be going to. I mean, you should be going to Rotate This. You should be going to Sonic Boom, which is gigantic. There's lots of little record stores that are all over the place. Venues, there's a lot of venues in Toronto that we hear about everywhere else in Canada just because they're super famous and everyone plays these places. So you got places like the big one is the legendary Horseshoe Tavern, which is down on Queen Street West in Toronto, and I think everyone has played there. The Rolling Stones have played there, and it's just this like big room of a dive bar, but it's been there forever and it's really centrally located, and like every rock and roll band ever has played there. So there's always stuff that's going on there. And then you have places that are in town, like Sneaky D's, or like oh God, I'm blanking on some of these other places. I don't know. There's lots of stuff going on in Toronto, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, you want to kind of be in tune with what's going on at the Horseshoe. You want to know what's going on down at Rotate This or down at Sonic Boom. There's one venue that I heard about the other day, and I do not remember the name of it, but there is there's a huge like noise rock scene going on in Toronto right now. Lots of like really like, I don't want to say mathy, but like really, really loud, really distorted, yeah, you know, super, super scuzzy punk rock stuff that's going on. It's the scene that like Metz came out of, but it's also the scene that with bands like Adonis and HSY and lots of bands like on Buzz Records and stuff. Graze is a little bit part of that scene. There's this one venue that all those bands are playing, and I do not remember the name of it at the moment, but there is a documentary on YouTube that is called, let's see, Toronto.
Adam E., while Adam White's looking it up, do you have any favorite Torontian bands?
I've been to Toronto once. It was in May and it snowed on us, so that was sort of weird.
In May?
Yes,
that's
in
not
May.
Normal.
In May. No, I know it was abnormal, but it did. It snowed and hailed and it was pretty wild. But I did see Public Image Limited while I was there.
Nice.
This was in like 2010 Ooh. Or 11 or something. Like when they just recently got back together and went on tour. So I saw them there at a place that I will never remember the name of ever.
How was right, Public
here.
Image?
I got what I was missing. So go watch a documentary on YouTube called Untold Noise that talks about the Toronto kind of like noise punk scene. And in that, you're going to check out all these really crazy bands that are playing, but you're also going to see a bunch of scenes from like various like DIY spaces that are in the city. And these are like spaces. These are not necessarily like, you know, proper venues and bars and stuff like that, but these were like these young bands are going to hang out and play. So you're looking at places like the White House Studio or Soybomb headquarters. So you definitely want to go check that out. So it's called Untold Noise, Toronto Noise Punk documentary. Go look that up. It's like 20 minutes long. It's totally worth your while to watch. It's crazy.
Well, there you have it. That's Adam White's recommendations, and we got another letter that doesn't really have and it doesn't really require an answer. But as you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Jeff Rosenstock, and we talked about would Tommy Microchip, our manifestation of the current millennial, would Tommy Microchip enjoy the new Jeff Rosenstock stuff? And here's what John said. He said, not me. This is another John. That shit was hilarious. Tommy Microchip had me laughing out loud on the bus, and nobody could see I was wearing headphones because of my hat, so I got to be that weird guy that just keeps laughing to himself. I teach a college class, and Tommy Microchip is all of my students. Love the podcast. Keep it up. So thanks for the email, John. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And while we're talking about Jeff Rosenstock, let's throw this over to Adam E. I think Adam E.'s a Jeff Rosenstock fan. Adam E., Jeff Rosenstock, he's streaming the new album. It's called We Cool, and he's doing 5 record release shows in one day on March 8th in the 5 boroughs. Are you down with this record? Are you down with 5 shows in 5 days?
I've never been a huge fan, honestly, but I got nothing against the guy. He seems like a nice guy. You know, the record is what it is. It's not my thing, but I think people who like all his previous stuff will enjoy this. I do think the 5 shows in one day in the 5 boroughs is kind of neat. It might be tough for somebody, I think, to get to all 5 if they wanted to. It's they're not as close together as it seems, but it's pretty cool. Like, why not do that?
Well, if Jeff can get to all 5.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Mm-hmm. Unless he has some sort of rocket sled or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, honestly, depending on the day, like, to get from, like, the 5, it could take an hour or more, or 2 hours, to get from one part of New York to the next, but,
So, have you guys heard this, or are we still talking about New York?
I have heard it, yes. Have you?
What do you think, John? What do you think of the new Jeff Rosenstock?
I think the audience is not John Gentile, but I think his audience and the broader audience will love this. What I like about Bomb Music Industry is it's spastic, it's wacky, and it flips between the zany and the crazy and the deeply emotional. This record almost completely shoes the zany and the crazy and like the hard-driving fun stuff, and it's almost entirely a serious record. It seems to be a very honest record, very heartfelt record. It's very much a college rock record, if you ask me. Maybe college rock tempered by a little bit of orgcore punk. That being said, when people talk about the music industry, they never talk about the zany and crazy stuff, which is my favorite thing. They always talk about, like, oh, I feel like Jeff Rosenstock felt in, you know, was a song called 26, or I feel like Jeff Rosenstock in, you know, the Chicago punk, the first time I met San Juan. They always talk about the emotional depth. And so I think people will really respond to this. And I think if Jeff Rosenstock is going to break through to a larger part of his career, which he already sort of has, but we'll see if it takes off, this will be the record to do it. This record will be the litmus test, if you will.
I guess I agree with you. I mean, it's not – well, on the one hand, it's not Vacation or one of those bomb records that I – you know.
Scrambles. I love Scrambles.
Scramble. Oh, my God. Scramble, right? Like, well, it's not one of those. It's not dramatically out of left field or anything. Like, let's say this was the next Bomb the Music Industry record, and that was what the name on the cover was, I wouldn't necessarily bat an eye about it being called that, right? Like, I'd probably observe that, you know, hey, they're a little bit less crazy on this one than they have been in the past, but I wouldn't be like, no, this is a totally different project, which, I don't know, which I guess is good and bad in a way. I mean, if you were a fan of Bomb the Music Industry, this is obviously the next logical step for you to take, and you know there's no reason not to go check this out, because it's, you know, it's the continuation of, I guess, what that band was doing, for better or worse. But on the other hand, It does give me some pause about why it's not just why he didn't just keep branding it Bomb the Music Industry. I mean, like I get that a lot of those other guys weren't there, but his personality dominates the project so much.
That's one thing I never, like, in my brain, Jeff Rosenstock is Bomb the Music Industry, but I don't know how accurate that is.
Yeah, and that's how I've always thought about it, but I'm sure that's discrediting the other people that play with them all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I mean, he, when I think of Bomb the Music Industry, I think of him, but yeah, I mean, he must have a reason he calls it something else now.
Adam?
Yeah.
Have we got Adam?
No, he's there. Oh, you can't hear him?
I can't hear him.
Oh, Adam, can you speak again?
Oh, yeah, here I am.
Did you hear him? Did you hear him, Adam W?
Yes. Okay, this is fascinating for all of our listeners. Check okay. One.
Yes.
So, I agree with you guys. It seems like that this is Jeff Rosen. To me, this is Jeff Rosenstock, perhaps boiled down to fewer attributes, but his core attributes, and I think that's why people are responding to it. So. Speaking of a band that is also hip among the kids, Falling in Reverse, they've released a new video. The video is for the song Just Like You, and I believe the refrain is I'm an asshole just like you. And I'll kick this off. You know, I wanted to hate this band because this band is terrible. You know, they've had so many bad songs that just aren't – I mean, like, you know, they're incredibly sexist. They're incredibly chauvinistic. They're incredibly just – they're quote bad boys. You know, I think if they ever met a real bad boy, it'd be an entirely different story. But I don't want to fault them just on that. I mean, I could let them slide if the music was good, but the music was just so bad. And then Ronnie Radke released his hip hop solo song where it had one of my favorite lines, and by favorite, I mean ironically favorite lines in all of hip hop. I'm sitting on you rappers like I was wearing Pampers, which I think is phenomenal. So they put out this new track, and this video confused me for a couple of reasons. First of all, it starts off with like Ronnie Radke like looking like he wants to fight with a jock guy. But I mean, I don't know that jocks hate Falling in Reverse. I didn't understand that at all. Maybe just because I'm not in that scene at all. Like, do jocks or pretty boys like hate Falling in Reverse? I don't think so. But maybe they do. I really don't know. Second, is this guy's 31 or 32, and he's writing music with a refrain, "I'm an asshole just like you." But that all could be forgiven if the song was good. And for the first 5 seconds of this song, I'm like, it had like a Queen style bombastic intro, and I'm like, oh my god, is this actually going to be a good song? Like, is this going to be like a kind of funny-ish Queen-ish type song? But after 10 seconds it devolves into just another bland pop punk number, or not even a pop punk number, a pop number, strictly pop. So in some ways this track creates the worst offense of all. It's not good music, it's bad music, it's not stimulating, it doesn't make me think. It's not offensive. It's just bland and boring and has a refrain that definitely sounds like it was written by a ghostwriter to me.
This is the worst thing ever. The song sucks. The video sucks. The band sucks. If you like this band, you probably suck. This is terrible.
I mean, is that what he wants, though? I suspect like their earlier stuff was worse than this. Their earlier stuff like alternated R&B crooning and like screamo screaming, and it was just so bad. And I kind of thought they were purposely trying to be as bad as possible, just so like kids would listen to it and like piss off their parents. Take this, parents. This is what I'm listening to. This horrible music. Like, is he trying to make bad music, or does he actually think this is good?
I think this
and
is.
And he's 32, mind you. I mean, this is I not like a 17-year-old. This guy's 32.
This is for kids who want to do exactly that. You know, it's among the more offensive to your parents, you know, at age 12, 13, 14, things you can find, I guess.
Do you think Ronnie Radke sees himself as anything more than that? Like, do you think he thinks he's a clever artist or a provocateur even? Or do you think he realizes, I'm just peddling shit to kids to make money?
I'm going to go with peddling shit to kids.
Like, he realizes he's doing
that. Because, I mean, the issue with this is that it's not offensive enough. and you'd sort of expect it to be offensive. Like, if the band was really going to go take the piss out of, you know, the image that people have out of them, and you know, write a song that's a little bit of an FU back to the world or whatever, right? You would expect it to be less of a bland and calculated pop song as this is. I mean, I've only ever heard this band whenever we talk about them, make fun of them, and I can't quite recall what they sound like before this. But I do recall them at least playing music that was offensive in the way that it was like sort of horrible, like where they were oscillating between, you know, that mall emo shrieking and pop music, and it was just jarring and bad. This is, you know, this is every bit as calculated a pop song as you will hear from anyone that, you know, plays for 16-year-olds on the radio, but that's not really all that edgy or offensive. So I don't know what they're shooting for here. Like, to me, this is incredibly tone deaf in that way. Like, not musically, but I guess thematically. Like, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish. I don't know how this accomplishes it.
I think what they're trying to accomplish is give kids music to piss off their parents with, so kids will buy it.
Yeah, but there's so much more offensive music that you could play if you're trying to piss off your parents.
But if it's too offensive, the parents will take it away and not let the kids buy it.
I guess, but there's nothing even subversive about it here. It's not. This isn't offensive in a way that like the kid's gonna, you know, really identify with the deeper shit that's going on in the song, but hey, maybe it's gonna offend their parents. Like, there's none of that happening. And like, this is all just like surface. It's shallow. There's nothing there. I don't know. I think kids are smarter than this.
I kind of don't, honestly.
I think this is sort of a safe mainstream way of being offensive, and I think it's probably more so aimed at the stupid rebellious kids rather than the smart rebellious kids who might find their way into something that actually is subversive.
Yeah, even I mean, like, I'm not anti-Rage, but Rage Against the Machine compared to this is like Einstein and, you know, Goofus and Gallant, you know what I mean?
Oh man, I mean, like, Rage Against the Machine, for all their faults, was at least like trying to make a statement about something. Like, this is, you know, like they were sincere at least, and like, this just isn't enough of anything. Like, it doesn't go enough in any one direction to be good on any particular level. Like, it's not offensive enough to be like to be really all that offensive. It's not you know, it's not like hooky enough to really be a good pop song. It's definitely not punk enough to be anything. It's not. I have no idea who this appeals to. I'm going to give kids way more credit. I think kids are smarter than this.
This band sells records.
You know who may be smarter than this? Canadian kids.
Speaking of kids being smarter than this, this is out on Mr. Brett's label, Epitaph Records, and so Epitaph used to be a punk label. I still consider Epitaph a punk label. This music has a lot of, well, it's not a good message. I mean, it's not a good message in that it's not a positive message, but it's not a negative message that encourages critical thinking. Like, I don't think a label should necessarily have to put out a positive or negative message, but it's just dumb. It's just so dumb. Here's the question. Does Mr. Brett have a duty to put out music that isn't as vapid and dumbing as this? Or is Mr. Brett almost being a martyr and that I will put out this horrible music on my label so I can make enough money to put out the next hot water music record or whatever? You know what I mean?
The argument, right? Like, that's the argument that I've always heard. You jump in, Adam.
No, I think that's a very interesting question. I mean, it's interesting to me that like this is on the same label that Propaganda is on. Mm. That's a pretty wild, you know, both ends of the spectrum there. I mean, I don't know if he has a duty because, you know, it's a business and whatnot, but you would think he would want to.
But does he want to? Like, great question. And here's why. Now, this band is dumb. This band, I think, debuted at Billboard on their last record at like 12 or 8. That's pretty good, especially for an independent label, you know? The question is, could he find another band that's not as dumb as this? You know, I'm not saying a punk band, but a band that is not insultingly and perhaps punishing to kids as this? Like, could he do that and he just doesn't care? Or is this what he has to do to keep turning a profit? Or is he completely laissez-faire and he's like, you know what? I trust the kids enough that I will put out whatever they want and I trust that they're smart enough to use the music appropriately or whatever, or make their own judgment call. Like, is well, he stri- do, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do these guys sell like a ton of records?
This is easily one of the highest selling bands on Epitaph. They're one of Epitaph's highest Billboard debuts ever.
Good Lord.
This band has a lot. Well, I mean, you look at the music video. The music video is not a cheap music video, you know? You can usually tell how much makes by their music video.
John, shut up. All right, so I gotta answer this. what I've always seen and is I've absolutely heard the argument over the years, and this has been the argument for years. So back when Epitaph was putting out new records from The Locust, they used to comment that Brett used to comment. I remember, like, he would say, like, you know, oh, well, the reason we put out records by, I don't know who was the band at the time, like From First to Last or one of those bands, is because that pays for us putting out cool records by The Locust. Now, that's always been the argument. But whenever you hear Brett talk about these bands in the press, whenever he's interviewed about them, he sounds super excited about them. Like, he sounds like he's really, really into it.
Yeah, so, but if he wants to sell the records.
I know, but that's where I'm torn on this. Because on the one hand, I don't like thinking that Mr. Brett is an insincere person. Like, I want to say that, you know what? If he has decided that he's into this, he's probably actually into this. Like, he's not just, like, saying he's into this to, you know, sell a few records, but secretly he hates it. Like, I kind of want to, I might be me being naive, but I kind of want to believe that, like, you know, even if I hate it, if he's into it, he's actually into it. And that always makes me think that, like, you know, I've always considered, you know, Brett Gurewitz have like a pretty good ear for stuff. So does that mean I'm not getting something here because I'm writing it off prematurely? Or that's where I'm torn. That's where the conflict comes in here.
I don't know. I think it's objectively terrible, so it really makes me. I mean, I get the idea that sometimes you put out things that are less what you'd be into necessarily to make a little extra scratch to put out something you really want to put out. I can see that. I can't imagine that he's into it. So when he says he's into it, I don't know. You know, I guess you gotta move units. So what are you gonna do other than say I'm putting out this record? I'm into it. You're gonna say I'm putting out this record, but it's not very good. But you know, please buy it anyway.
Well, let's cleanse our palate. Let's play a tune. Who's got a tune here? I got a tune. If none of you guys do,
you go.
All right. So, anyways, Punk News has recently become friends with Chris Gethard. Chris Gethard is a stand-up comedian. He's got a new show coming out. I think he's pretty funny. Adamy, I think you know him, don't you?
I don't know, but I'm familiar with the show, and I enjoy it.
He had a public access show, and it's pretty wacky. Like, they just do wacky stuff every week. Well, they got a new show coming up on Fusion TV, which I'm excited about. His wife is in the group's backing band. She's got a new band. Her name is Haley Bullitt. Her band is called Hiccup, and she's got they just put up some brand new tracks. So let's listen to Whatev It's Cool by Hiccup, featuring Haley Bullitt.
Tell me that you're down.
And we are back on the Pungies podcast. Let's go from one awesome band to another. Let's talk about Screaming Females, man. I was always kind of a fan of this band, never a huge fan. They just put out their new record. I'm now a huge fan of Screaming Females. The new record is called Rose Mountain, and they released a music video. The music video is called Hopeless. Did you guys watch this video? Are you guys excited about this record? Do you guys like this band?
Yes.
I am. Yeah. I'm into this. I haven't heard much more by this. So give me a little bit of the overview. If people have only seen this video, if they've only heard Hopeless, what's is the rest of their stuff in the same sort of vein? Is it more up-tempo?
Excellent question, Adam White. The general theme of Screaming Females is the following. It's three people: Marissa Paternoster on guitar and singing, and I think she's a guitar genius. I actually think she's a genius at guitar. Mike Abate on bass, and then Jarrett, I forget his last name, on drums. And the idea is they play very energetic, hard-rocking numbers that are kind of between hard rock and punk. Their music was usually pretty sloppy and wild. This new record is a significant break from their former work, and that the new album is still rocking. It's still, you know, hard rock or maybe just rock and roll with a little bit of punk, but it's a lot cleaner and it's a lot more precise. So the new record is a very clean-sounding record, which paradoxically for me, I usually like sloppy records. The new record is, I think, their best one. It's the most precise. It's the most accurate. The other tracks are a little bit more up-tempo than this, namely the track Wishing Well, which I think is one of the greatest songs I've heard all year. It makes me feel like I'm 2 feet above the ground. But roughly speaking, it's a three-piece band. They rock really hard, a little bit of punk influence, and Marissa Paternoster is a very unique singer. So that's my take. Adam, E, do you agree? Do you disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan. I was familiar with them, but not really familiar with them. Then I saw them live in Philly on this like crazy bill with Painted Black and I think Iron Sheik.
What year was that?
Punch. 2009.
Oh, okay, yeah. We could have hung out. I wasn't in Philly at the time.
Some year like that. So, and they ripped. I mean, they were so good. And I think you're right. She is a pretty proficient guitar player. And I remember I was there with my brother and a couple of his friends, and his one friend who's also a guitar player was like, you know, looked over at me halfway through their set and was, you know, holy shit. But yeah, this record is definitely cleaner, I think, is a good way to describe it, but still pretty awesome.
Yeah, I saw them live last week. They were awesome, man. They're about to go on a big tour. I'm thinking it's going to be one of my favorite records of 2015. What else can I say? This band rocks. This video is cool. Speaking of another thing that rocks, let's go back in time. The Cro-Mags / Bad Brains supergroup, which calls themselves The Regulator, are playing another show. As you might recall, they played a show about 4 or 5 months ago for a kids' cancer benefit. The new show will be at the Black and Blue Bowl on May 16. Other bands there are going to be Candira, Madball, Turnstile, Earth Crisis, Crumbsucker, Sick of It All, Dave Smalley of All, and Dag Nasty, a couple other bands, and Wisdom in Change. So it's going to be John Joseph of Cro-Mags on vocals, Daryl Jennifer and Dr. No on a guitar and bass, and Cro-Mags drummer Mackie Jason on drums. They're going to be doing an all Cro-Mags set. This sounds awesome, man. This sounds really, really awesome. I heard a few scattered reports from the last show, and apparently it's as great as you think it would be.
John, this is one of these things I think uniquely is a you story. So, what more can you tell the people about this? Where can they find some info?
You can't. Everybody in the Cro-Mags is insane. Everybody in the Bad Brains is insane. You will not find info about this anywhere. I mean, really, if this band was smart, they would pull a flag and tour the entire U.S. This band could, because the point, everybody's wanted a good Bad Brains tour for the past 20 years, you know? It's just not going to happen. HR is cool. I respect HR. HR does not want to be in the Bad Brains anymore. You will not get to see the Bad Brains ever again. Probably not. But John Joseph doing the HR position, because remember, actually, maybe the kids don't know, the single greatest influence on John Joseph of the Cro-Mags, and he said this many times, was HR. And in fact, when he sings, you can hear that he's trying to emulate HR. Now, John Joseph isn't HR, so that resulted in a very unique singing style that's different than HR, but you can certainly hear the influence there. One of the main things which I always loved about HR is when HR sings, and most vocalists don't do this, he does what I call the Johnny Rotten, is when he sings, he really does weird inflections in a song. So, for example, where most artists might say, you know, we've got that attitude, HR will go like, we've got that attitude. Like, he'll really warp the words. And I really think Johnny Rotten invented that style, like when you listen to Sex Pistols tunes. Well, John Joseph does that same thing, too, if you listen to the first Cro-Mags record. So he's uniquely qualified to fill the slot. And I got to say, I would say John Joseph is the world's best replacement for HR if you have to replace HR. And so I really think his band should tour the U.S., you know, put out a live album, which would be amazing. Are they going to do it? Probably not, because everybody in this band is just such a mess. But I would recommend seeing this. I might go up to New York to see it.
Hey, this is staff reviewer Tricky Ricky Frankel. I'm here bringing you a song for this episode of the podcast. This is from a band called Old Friends. They have a new EP out called It's Not Working Out off It's Alive Records. I saw them opening up for the Bomb Pops at their Can of Worms EP release show, and I was very intrigued by this band because to celebrate the Can of Worms EP release, the lead singer actually ate a live worm on stage. It was really funny, and they put on a really good show. They kind of got this pop punk, skate punk vibe, and I think you'll all really enjoy them. This song is off their new EP called It's Not Working Out, which came out in February on It's Alive Records. The song is called 373 Crystal Lake Road, the Big Bear song. So take a listen.
Let's hop to another story here. What do you want to talk about, John? Nothing major happened.
I know you guys want to talk about Record Store Day. Anything cool coming out?
Yeah, let's talk about a little bit of Record Store Day. John, were you burned on RSD last year? Was that your that your opinion?
Burned out, if you will.
Burned out.
I used to be very, very pro Record Store Day, but what happened? Like in the past year and a half or so, they just haven't, like I used to love Record Store Day because they would put out, like, like exclusive Off Live records, exclusive Tegan and Sarah records, all this really interesting stuff that you can't get anywhere. You know what I mean? And normally labels couldn't put that out because the demand's not high enough. But because it's Record Store Day, they could put out all this really rare, exclusive, weird stuff. I loved it. But it almost like they're kind of running out of ideas or steam. And lately, they've just been putting out like reissues. And not only that, is like the price of a 7-inch at Record Store Day has gone from like $6 or $7 to like $15. Price of a 12-inch on Record Store Day, easy 25, sometimes 35 or 40, and it's kind of gouging. So the past year and a half, there's just not been anything I've been really excited about. So I just really haven't been in the record store the past year, just because the prices are too high. But more than that, they just haven't been putting out anything super interesting. So that answers your question, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, like I was looking through the list that Exclaim posted of the pre-releases for this year, and there's nothing on there that I think jumps out at me here. I mean, like everything that I don't know falls into the arena of stuff I would be interested in is probably pretty available in a non-exclusive form, right? Like. You know, so the self-titled Social Distortion record, okay, well, whatever. I'm sure you can find that. This one has, like, a split color, whatever, right? Nico Case's Fox Confessor Brings the Flood. That's not an old record. You can absolutely go out and find that somewhere. But, oh, this one's on Exclusive Red. Like, those kind of releases, I don't find all that interesting. I'm not going to run out to, like, grab a record that I could probably just buy elsewhere, right? Like, there's a whole bunch of Hold Steady stuff that's coming out this year, but it's just, like, different colors of an LP that you could probably already go buy in any store. So I don't get it. There's nothing right now that's super, super jumping out at me. I mean, there's a few things that I was looking at here that I thought was kind of interesting. Like there's a lot of Jesse Malin on this list. There's like a 10-inch from an old Degeneration release that's on here. And then Jesse's got his own stuff on here. So if you're a fan of Degeneration, Jesse Malin, there's definitely stuff that's coming out, but yeah, nothing on this list that I was going through that is going to make me go get in a line.
Yeah, same here. I'm kind of over it. Like the releases aren't as good. The prices are ridiculous, and I just feel like I go to the record store and I fight with people who like go there once a year.
Yeah. There's a couple things on here that I'm semi-interested about. The Guar, America Must Be Destroyed double release. That's kind of cool, but it's unnecessary. It was released on CD, so releasing it on vinyl isn't going to make it better. You know what I mean? It's just kind of a item, you know? The Slayer 7-inch looks kind of cool because it's got a live version of Black Magic. But do I need to spend $15 for one live Slayer song? You know what I mean? And the Run the Jewels four song 12-inch, that could be cool depending on what's on it and depending on what they charge. Related, do you guys think that Record Store Day is fixable? Also related, what's your opinion of flippers? Because flippers are pretty bad, not as bad as they used to be, but there's still a lot of flippers at Record Store Day. Is that just fair open marketplace rules, or is that unethical?
It's obviously against the spirit of Record Store Day, whatever that means, but you know, it's something I guess you got to live with.
That's the kind of thing that kills any collector market eventually. I mean, you look at like comic books in the 90s, the Death of Superman era, right, where everyone is just rushing out the stores and buying up all of this crap just so that they could like stick it in a box and hopefully sell it for hundreds of thousands of dollars one year. Like God, if eBay was around back during that collector's boom, you would have expected all that stuff to be like bought and immediately thrown up onto eBay for people to buy. So it's the same sort of thing where it just like you end up having the people that make these products stop making the products for the fans and they start making the products for the collectors. And then the collectors don't actually want that stuff. They just want to make money off of it. So then that's, you have a pretty shaky foundation at that point for a sustainable industry. So it's dangerous to go down that road.
Is Record Store Day fixable?
I question why why it needs the level of organization that it needs. I mean, like, if you're a band or a label or a store for that matter, you could put together, you know, crazy little events or exclusive releases or whatever, and it doesn't necessarily have to be hitched to this global event. You could, you know, potentially do your own thing where you're not going to necessarily drive, you know, hundreds of people in the door on one single day, but I don't know, it might be more sustainable. So, you know, I think it's fixable, but I think it's definitely, you know, the bloom is off the rose.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is, but it's the kind of thing that, considering it involves, you know, independent record stores, you would think should be more organic, you know, not so much built around this, whatever it is that seems to organize and regulate Record Store Day. I think without this entity, you know, stores can still kind of decide that this day, you know, the whatever last Saturday in April or whatever it is, will be Record Store Day and put on their own events. You know, it takes on sort of a local flavor as well. Then, you know, depending on what store you're at, it has its own kind of feel for Record Store Day. Now it's very, you know, very streamlined and kind of vanilla.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's that. I think it is repairable, but like, for me, the special part of Record Store Day was like rare, weird releases. If for me to get excited, they have to get back to that. I don't really need a Neil Young repress. You know what I mean? I don't know. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about? Anything that sparks your interest here?
Nah.
Well, all right then. Should we wrap it on up?
Well, I don't know. Is there? So amongst the stories that we had, there was nothing there that did. I don't know. There's nothing there that moved me, I guess. This is such a weird part of the year where just like bands are recording or writing or, you know, getting ready to announce tours or whatever. And then, you know, we in the news community just sort of like spin around in a circle.
Well, let's get back to what punk rock's all about. Adam W., Adamy, you guys been to any hot shows lately? Any good shows?
I've been strictly in like old man mode, so I'm totally out of it right now.
Yeah, I same here. Very much old man mode type stuff. I moved. I carried boxes. I watched Frozen a lot. So not a lot of going to shows lately, at least.
Well, let me tell you, folks. I saw the Iron Reagan Napalm Death tour. Let me tell you, Iron Reagan was cool, Exhumed was cool, Voivod was cool. Let me tell you, people, Napalm Death kicked ass. I could not believe how loud, how berserk, how short, how sharp, how wild they were. I'm a Napalm Death fan, not a maniac, definitely don't have all their albums. I got about four or five Napalm Death albums. I don't even know half their songs, but live they were enthralling. It was like just like, and the lead singer, Barney Greenway, he's got like a broken arm, so his arm's in a cast. And so he's like hunched over the whole show, and he's like stomping around the stage like a Tyrannosaurus Rex with one arm in a sling, and he's like throwing it almost like a punch or something, and he's got his other hand on the mic, and he's just doing his like, and like the music is like super loud, super sharp. It was awesome. If you get a chance to see the Napalm Death tour, go see it. I got a special thing because it was in San Francisco, actually it was in Oakland. So Jello Biafra was there. So Jello Biafra gets on stage and they covered Nazi punks, which was so awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
The other thing too is you've been hanging out in San Francisco, right? So you get way more crazy shows going on in the middle of February than
the Bay Area is insane. I'll tell you, within a span of 8 days, I saw Leftover Crack, Cro-Mags, Napalm Death, Voivod, He Who Cannot Be Named of the Dwarves, and Screaming Females in the span of 8 days. It was insane. Where do you guys think the best live spot for the music in the world is? I say the Bay Area.
No, I've heard a lot about, like, I've never been there to, I guess, compare in the same way, although I've been there. But, like, is that not a title that Austin likes to take?
It is. I disagree, though, because Austin gets a lot of rock music, garage rock music, but the Bay Area gets reggae, gets hip-hop, gets heavy, huge heavy metal scene in Bay Area, huge punk rock scene. See, Austin is kind of one flavor. Bay Area is all the flavors.
Yeah, I mean, Austin definitely has that reputation, but I don't think the selection's quite as diverse. I mean, the Bay Area is one. New York is still, you know, kind of it's the biggest city in the world, and you know, so it still gets a lot of everything. I've seen a lot of good shows in Philly as well.
Why are you up in Philly so often, Adamy?
I was up there often because my brother used to live there, so I would go visit. He does not live there anymore.
Mm, well, fair enough. Well, all right, boys, then should we wrap this up then?
Yeah, well, if anyone wants to email us or anything, it's podcast@punknews.org. We're going to have way more interesting things going on as the you know, world keeps turning from this week. But hey, we'll get there. But yeah, write us emails. We want to hear them. You know, if you like this show, if you listen to this thing, you know, go buy a cassette tape for $6. It would really really make everyone happy. And
you won't regret it. It is an awesome tape. 2 hours, 42 bands. How can you beat $6? You can't beat that.
It fits in your mouth.
Fits in your mouth. It's got exclusive tracks. It's got shout outs from Jello Biafra. Shout outs from Jesse Michaels. It's badass.
So, anyways, that's all, I think. So I guess we'll see you guys next week.